welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc. And this is the second episode of our movie musical series. We have two more episodes to go where we will be choosing two musicals from the same time period, one success and one failure, and discussing why each one achieved the results they did. And this week we watched A Chorus Line and Little Shop of Horrors. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel.
It's John.
And he's back by popular demand.
I'm back.
Our friend Russell has joined us here. He's moved in with us now, so you'll probably hear a lot more from him because he's just around now.
Yeah, baby.
Popular demand by Samuel. Samuel was getting insecure that he wasn't here with him. So as we've said before, these episodes are done a little bit differently. Our goal isn't to necessarily review both movies individually. It's to sort of break down the successes and failures of each movie. So we are still going to go through both movies' plots, but we're not doing our usual like nitpicky little deep dive on each one. So starting with A Chorus Line, this one came out in 1985. It was directed by Richard Attenborough and written by Arnold Schulman, based on the original musical by Michael Bennett, and stars Michael Douglas as Zach and Allison Reed as Cassie. And you can buy or rent this on Prime Video, YouTube, iTunes, Apple TV, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, "Hopefuls try out before a demanding director for a part in a new musical." So Samuel, tell us some facts.
Yeah, so Richard Attenborough, who directed it, you know him mostly as an actor. He's done a bunch of stuff as an actor. John Hammond.
He
was
also
in Dr. Dolittle. He was the circus guy.
He was the guy I liked the best.
As a director, he's only done 12 movies. I have not heard of any of them besides A Chorus Line, and he directed Gandhi.
So, Gandhi.
He directed Gandhi? He taught Gandhi?
So that's Richard Attenborough. Arnold Schulman, who wrote the screenplay. He did a lot of 60s stuff. This was actually one of the last things he wrote. He did a lot of 60s movies that nobody's really ever heard of at all.
Okay.
I haven't heard of any of these movies. Goodbye Columbus, To Find a Man, Funny Lady, Players, and
I've
the band
of
played
funny
on,
girl.
Etc.
I haven't heard
I've
of
heard
funny
of some
players.
Movies I've never heard of, so this was probably by far his most
notable.
Yeah,
his most notable.
Like direction credit.
Nice.
Well, good.
Solid basis.
Oh wait, writing credit. We were on the writer. That's what we were on. It's been 2 weeks, guys. We're getting back in the swing.
I mean, so far, I mean, I will say outright, nothing has been as bad as Dr. Dolittle.
Oh, that is a high bar to be as bad as Dr. Dolittle.
It really is.
That is,
I think,
tough
that's arguably the worst thing we've seen.
Oh,
on
it's
this
definitely
podcast.
The worst thing that we've watched.
It was also
sure.
The longest thing I think I've ever seen.
That's probably true.
It was just the longest thing, like 2.5 hours of nothing.
So Michael Bennett, who wrote the musical.
And choreographed and directed
right,
it.
Right, he's most well-known. He was a choreographer, mostly, and he was most well-known for A Chorus Line. One of the other musicals that he directed and choreographed, though, was Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because we talked about that last night.
Yeah. We were comparing the urchins.
Yeah, from Little Shop. So, yeah, that's the writers and directors.
Yeah. So, real quick, does anyone just have any, like, opening thoughts about, you know, how they felt about A Chorus Line before we start kind of going through it bit by bit?
I mean, A Chorus Line was chosen this week as, like, the example that wasn't so great.
Yeah.
And, like, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was...
I was expecting a lot worse.
Yeah. It was good. Like all of the choreography was great. Like, mm-hmm. the singing was pretty on par. Like... It was awesome.
Yeah, like some of the singing was really good, and then some of it was like, okay.
Yeah, there was some alright stuff.
I think probably the reason why it didn't do as well is we talked briefly before the podcast got going. It was a bit for a more niche type of audience. But I also think as far as like a plot goes, it was not like the plot points weren't really established in A Chorus Line like right out of the gate. Meanwhile, you had, you know, in Little Shop, we had beginning, middle, and motive, everything kind of mapped out in a generic storyline.
Well, so you know, I saw the stage production of A Chorus Line. I saw it for multiple days because I worked on it. And so, like, I'm pretty familiar with the general, like, gist of it. I learned about it in different classes. So I know that it came out of Michael Bennett basically did sort of what you see on stage. Like, the way he did it is he wanted to write a musical about, you know, sort of dancers slash actors slash performers' lives and what they go through in an audition. So what he did is he brought in a group of actors and essentially did a series of workshops that were then sort of translated into scenes. So, like, the whole thing of, like, tell me about, like, you know, your past and your family was, like, one of their little workshops they did. And then he would also do, like, you know, very intense dance days. Some days would just be, you know, tell me about this, that, and the other. Some days would be about this thing. And then he, you know, basically just picked the ones that resonated the most and just put those into the show. So if it makes sense of why, like, it was more of, like, sort of just a peering into a moment rather than, like, a full story, that's why.
Exactly. And I think that's why it didn't land as well. It's a very abstract kind of plot style. And the writing was interesting.
Right. And for most people, when they go to the theater, they go for more of, like, an escape from, like, their own job stress. They don't want to hear about the fun, pretty people that are dancing around on stage, the struggles they're going through backstage. Nah. Like, they just want to see, like, all the magic of it and be like, this is awesome. Yeah. Like,
I want to see Chris Evans grab a whole helicopter and hold it there for a solid minute while people look at his bicep for, like, a five-minute scene. And actually, there is a tangent. I also love... Who played Zach? I forget the actor's name.
Michael Douglas.
He is actually...
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say. Starring Michael Douglas as Zach and Allison Reed is cast.
You said that.
Oh, I did? Okay.
Yep. He is Hank Pym in the Marvel MCU.
Yeah.
Also well known for a lot of other things.
Oh, absolutely.
I was about to say, like, looking at him, I know that I've seen him in other things, but I haven't seen enough Marvel to where I think that that's what I know him from. So I was like, it's got to be something else. Like...
Yeah, but it seems like most of the whole thing with The Chorus Line versus A Little Shop of Horrors is The Chorus Line, it had a plot, right? But the plot wasn't necessarily, like, so story-heavy. It was kind of just, like, let's use the plot as a device to, like, reveal secret things about, like, the industry.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, what someone who would be auditioning for these parts would go through. Like, it starts with, like... 40 people in the very beginning, and then half of them get
narrows
taken away.
Down, yeah.
And then another half get taken away, and then there's, like, you know, 12, and then only eight
get to stay.
Actually get to stay, and it's like, oh man, like you've like get familiar with all these characters, and then right in front of your eyes, like, they have to leave.
They're gone. Like,
dang it! Like, I want to know what happens with their stories. I want to know how the show goes. And then there's that little,
like, what happens to Paul? Like,
yeah, exactly. But
it's just supposed to be like a moment in time, and it's like this is what happens. This is what you're actually seeing when you go to a theater. Is like you're seeing all these people, but you just see their characters and you don't see everything that's behind it. Like, oh, this dancer actually has an injury, but he's dancing on it anyway because he needs this job. Or like, you know, or that girl just had to fill in because you know, the actual actor or dancer's mom passed away, so she had to go fill in while she goes to like the funeral or something. You don't know any of that.
Right.
All you see is what you see.
Right.
And so you like the same way that you leave an actual show like that, not knowing anything about the actors, you leave this show not knowing where any of them are going. Mm-hmm. You're like, it's the same thing.
I mean, God, I Hope I Get is probably the biggest anthem of that whole Chorus Line. I mean,
it's the most relatable one for all artists.
For all artists, really.
It's like, I need this job so bad. So, just to sort of go through it, if you've never, like, seen the stage show or anything, which, one thing, before we get started, so if you watch this movie, my first reaction that freaked me out is, if you know the stage show, you know that, for the most part, you're not supposed to change Michael Bennett's original choreography, especially for the opening and closing numbers. It's supposed to be, like, just those numbers, and it's sort of out of respect to him, because he passed away, actually, during... I believe during the run of A Chorus Line, the actors got the news that he had died in the hospital because he had AIDS. And so it's sort of this like homage to him that like we're never going to change his choreography. Like it's always going to be like he's going to live on through these, you know, through this choreography that he created. And so when the movie started and all the choreography was different, I went, oh no. I was like, what did they choose to do? But I looked it up. This movie came out in 1985 and Michael Bennett passed away in 1987. So they didn't have that whole like sort of just known theatrical rule at that point. So I can forgive it. But I kept looking for all the movements I know. And I was like, the only time they came up was in the very last number. And I was like, okay, this number is still his choreography. Got it. But everything else, I was like, oh my gosh, they changed the audition song. Like, I'm freaking out. But yeah, so that, I just wanted to point that out really quick. They are not breaking rules because this was before all that happened. Which Michael Bennett was supposed to be involved with this movie. And he was involved for a little bit, but he wanted more creative control than they were willing to give him. So he just like deuced out. He actually wanted way less of the Zach and Cassie stuff. He was like, don't make that the center. And then they like kind of heavily made it the center.
Yeah, that was a very...
Because in the stage show, that is not the biggest part of the show at all. Like, at all. She shows up like a normal auditioner. She doesn't take any spots from anybody. She does still have her big dance number like she did, where she's sort of like trying to kind of get his attention. But I think she was more just dancing on the stage alone. I don't know. Yeah, like that's all still in there, but it's way smaller. Like it is not the central part of the entire thing. So that weirded me out a lot. But so a little bit of the plot. The group of dancers congregate on a Broadway theater stage, beautiful stage, to audition for a new musical production directed by Zach. After initial eliminations, 16 hopefuls remain. So he's cutting half. Yep. Half of the people are going home. Arriving late is former lead dancer Cassie, who once had a tempestuous romantic relationship with Zach, but left him for Hollywood. Sam, would you like to complain a little bit about Cassie? I know you're going to want to at some point.
Yeah, it's just stupid that she comes in and steals a spot from all the people who were actually there at the right time and all of that stuff.
Yeah, if she had showed up on time, it would have been a different story.
If she had showed up on time and actually been one of the original auditioners and gotten a slot, then that's okay. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she shows up way after the fact and just steals a slot from one of the people, that's pretty screwed up.
Yeah. No, in the stage show, she shows up along with everybody else, and it's not weird. You don't even know that he knows her until he's reading off all the numbers, and then he just goes, 23, 17, Cassie, and he's, like, the only one that he, like, calls her name, and she kind of steps forward, like, okay, and like everyone's looking at her like, wait, what? How do you know her name? That's the first hint of like they know each other.
That's probably the most inaccurate part of the whole process.
Was the
you don't just sit there and get to a show up.
I don't know. Well, okay, showing up late, yes,
and like getting a spot from somebody else who has been waiting. No.
But also, she was super persistent, and like, it is a thing in the performance industry that if you know somebody, you have a way better shot of breaking rules and getting in.
Yeah, you're a shoo-in then. Because, yeah. I mean,
even if you don't know each other from Great Things, if you can appeal to just their, like, emotional attachment to you, then, like, you have a way better shot than anybody else.
Yeah, like, she also had proven herself before, had been in one of Zach's previous shows, which is why, like he was saying, oh, you know, like, you're too good. Like mm-hmm. you want to be up there in this chorus line. You really want to be in that chorus line. And she's like, I need the job. Mm-hmm. Which is like, she's using what she has.
Yeah.
You know, which...
But the problem is, and he points it out when she's trying to do the you know, one sort of rehearsal dance with them, and she's jumping in with both the guys and the girls to try to prove that she can blend, but she can't because she naturally puts her own style into everything. And so, like, he kept being like, don't pop your head, don't roll your shoulders, like, you have to fit with everybody else. And finally he just tells her, like, you know, just get out of the line, like, come here. And that's, like, one of my favorite parts is when he's like, is this really what you want? And, like, you look up there and the light kind of just makes it look like this very, like, robotic, almost no art to it kind of thing that they're all doing, just exactly the same.
Yep.
And she, like, she tries to be like, yeah, because, like, I need it. And he's like, no, but you don't want that. Like, that's not where you want or need to be. Like, you need to be the one out front in front of all of them. You don't need to be the one in the line. Which I did like the way they did that scene. That was cool, where they didn't change all that. But yeah, so she hasn't worked in over a year. She's desperate for work, even just to be a part of the line. He informs them that he is looking for 8 dancers, and he starts by having them go down the line and introduce themselves. Then Cassie speaks with Zach alone, and his secretary, Kim, tells her to get out. And then Zach's choreographer, Larry, who was kind of my favorite, stops her and tells her to stay. And then They all start going down, sort of talking about their lives. You know, my favorite, which is Mike doing the I Can Do That.
Yes, that
yes, I so love dude, that number. So
that was the best.
Yeah, it's so good because all it is just a dancer who is usually also a gymnast, just shows off everything they can do, all these crazy stunts and wild stuff. Like, our guy was an amazing tapper, but he also played our Bert in Mary Poppins, so he could do just all kinds of crazy, like, flips, and, like, he had no fear of heights, because he did, like, the proscenium walk upside down as Bert, so, like, we just did a bunch of crazy crap with him, and he was awesome, so that's always been my favorite song, so when it was really good on the screen, too, I was like, all right, I'm down with it. But yeah, they all go through all their different sort of, like, backstories, yeah, so meanwhile, Cassie has been sitting backstage waiting to speak with Zach and is, you know, kind of reminiscing over her, you know, past with Broadway, which it was interesting the way they did the flashbacks because they didn't do any sort of transition like a fade or any different filter on the past. It was just cut to the past. And so it was like, it was very jarring. Yeah. So like, I know, I think either Sam or Russell turned and was like, is this in the past? Like I really can't tell. And yeah, it's like, I think it's in the past, like, because her hair looks different, so it must be in the past. Yeah. But yeah, it did some weird cutbacks and forth. For the most part, I really like, I'm going to call him John Hammond. For the most part, I really liked John Hammond's directing. There were some weird choices he made, but they were few and far between. Mm-hmm. Like, choices like that where it was kind of jarring, like switching between present and past, like no real defining, transition. This is the past. Yeah. Sort of prestige style confusing me a little bit. Just suddenly, oh, here's the same actor in a different place, and you're supposed to assume it's 20 years earlier. Like, and then there was a weird moment with the girl with the really, really pretty eyes in the I Hope I Get It, when she just suddenly turns away and just kind of like sings off away from everybody and then turns right back into the scene. And I was like, okay, that we could have done without that moment. Like, we didn't need her to turn around and earnestly look off into the distance and then whip right back around. And it was like a 5-second solo. I was like, okay, like you could have just zoomed in on her face. Like, you didn't have to make her actively turn and look really dramatic. Those are the only like specific direction moments that I was like, okay, maybe not a great choice. But yeah, so back on stage, I know Connie is talking about how she's actually shorter than I am, apparently. It says here she was 4'10". I'm 4'11". And she was like, yeah, I'm 24 and I just got cast as a 14-year-old. And I'm like, that's my life. My entire life is getting cast as children.
Connie Wong, always Wong, never white.
That was good. And she was like, sorry, bad joke.
It was a great.
That was good. That was good. Yeah, but they all go through all their different stuff. And then, of course, my absolute, the song I love, Dance 10 Looks 3, is actually, because it was originally just going to be called an ass, but then they changed it to Dance 10 Looks 3 so it would surprise the audience and they wouldn't be expecting it. Like, they would just see in the program, Dance 10 Looks 3, okay. And so instead of calling it an ass, and then suddenly that's the entire song and they're like, okay. But yeah, so they go on to all kinds of different things. So Cassie enters the stage. Zach tells Larry, take them all away. And then Cassie begs him for a job and is doing this whole big, like, dance thing, which I told them I don't remember that song from the stage show. So I'm not sure if it was in the stage show or if they just added it for this girl, because she's definitely a singer, like, for sure. So I guess they were just like, hey, let's give her a song because she doesn't really have one, which I have a complaint about that later. But so she pleads for a job. So fed up with her, he just tells her to go downstairs and learn the hat routine. Paul comes back and has just the super emotional, wonderful monologue about his whole past with everything, which got interrupted for us by our dog bathing in grease and us having to go
and take care of him.
Yes, right in the middle. He was like, he was starting to like cry and talk about like his dad seeing him after the show, and we had to pause it because Frosty was covered in chicken grease. So that was fun. It's okay, Russell. No, Russell made us orange chicken last night, and he dumped the grease where he thought Frosty couldn't get in the yard, and oh boy, was Frosty able to get there. And he runs back in just coated in grease, so we had to pause the movie for a solid 30 to 45 minutes while we went upstairs to clean him up.
It was a pretty long time.
It was really rough. So when we came back, the emotion was just dead.
Completely
like,
gone.
Oh, it was so gone. Yeah. And we were just like, wow, Rossi just ruined the scene, but whatever. But it was a very beautiful scene where, you know, he actually sort of gets to learn about Paul's past. But yeah, so Larry brings the dancers back on stage to perform the routine. And as they repeat the combination, you can kind of hear all of their like inner thoughts and stuff, which I love, which is where they're singing. So, some people are singing the one singular sensation, and then other people are in their head, like speaking all the movements that they have to do sort of like right. underneath. And I was like, that's cool. Nice. I love it. Get dancer brain for a minute there. So Zach starts, you know, kind of shouting at Cassie, telling her she's not doing anything right. And then they argue. And then Larry starts the tap combo. And so before we go any further, the song, the one that Candace knew, What I Did for Love, not sung by her. And I'm mad that it was. It was not supposed to be her. In the stage show, what happens is they kind of have that little argument where he's like, look at them. And then she's like, you know, but I need to be one of them because I need this money. And then they start doing the tap combo. Paul hurts himself, gets dragged out. And then he's like, well, what are y'all planning on doing once your dance careers are over? Because everyone knows dancers only get like 10, maybe 20 years out of their career at most.
Right.
And 20 is if you're really healthy. And they're all talking about this stuff. And then the girl who did the whole like, I'm feeling nothing. I think her name's Diana. She answers the question like she did in the movie, but she starts the whole like what I did for love, and they're all singing it, and it's basically just a song about their passion. Oh. It's not about Cassie and Zach's relationship. It's about we had to do like we
so did they what contorted we had it.
To do. Yeah. Won't forget, can't regret what we did for love. Like it's because they love it, and they're like it doesn't matter. Like we're gonna do it as long as we possibly can. And they ruined it in the movie.
So they turned it
into a little like, I'm so sad about my relationship. Like, you know, I did it for love and all this stuff. And I'm like, get out of here. It was so much better in the stage show.
What I'm gathering is that the movie tried to turn a Chorus Line into a romance.
And it's
film.
Not a romance. Yeah, it's not at all.
It's about like that exposition.
Yes. Again, of, like, because it's so much it's like. More moving when you see all the dancers who have just watched potentially a guy end his career. Like, they don't know how bad the injury is. They don't know if he's going to even be able to dance again.
Yeah.
So they're like, what if his career is over? That's why he starts asking all of them, like, what are you planning on doing after this? Because that's something that happened in one of the workshops is one of the people got hurt. And they all just sort of talked about, like, what's going to happen, like, you know, to us when that eventually happens to us, when an injury ends our career. And right. then, like, that song sort of came out of it. And it's beautiful. It's this awesome moment where they're like, you know, passion over... you know, anything else like yeah. that. Like that's, I mean, the highest point.
So much better.
It's so much better. And I kept
in
waiting
that context than the one in the movie.
I know. I kept waiting right. for Cassie to stop singing and for Diana to be like, kiss the day. Goodbye.
Yeah, to take over.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it to go to everybody else. And I was going to be like, that makes sense. Great.
Cause nah, she like, had to ascend nope, that staircase.
Nope.
She went up all four flights, son.
Not to say she's not a great singer. She is, but it's not her song.
The use
Get
of the
out
song
of here.
Was like, a garbage.
It was so terrible, and I was so offended that they just ruined that song. So that's another one of my big complaints at John Hammond is do better with that.
Come on, Richard Attenborough.
You ruined it. You ruined it.
Do better.
Yes. Everything else he did fine, and then he ruined that number. But yes, so he gets taken off stage, and they talk all about what they can do when they can't perform anymore. And then he picks... Val, Cassie, BB, Diana, Mike, Mark, Richie, and Bobby to actually be on his line, which I have always loved that he kind of psychs everybody out. Like,
yeah.
that he makes everybody step forward and everyone who steps forward is so excited. And then he goes, front line, go home. And they're all just like, what? And Diana, like, was almost about to go forward. And then he went, wait, never mind. Step back. And she's, like, devastated until she realizes that she's been picked to stay.
She's accepted,
and she's like,
yeah.
Roller coaster, like
that is the biggest like simile to like an actor's mindset after like an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like the mental game is just obnoxious on that front.
But yeah, no. Watching this whole thing, like you know, I'm not like a dancer, but I am an actor, so I know like just the stress of you know standing there waiting to hopefully like hear your name get chosen or like your number get called to stay afterwards, and you're just like everything feels like you can't breathe.
I do have one other thing.
Okay.
Which I've told y'all this, and it's, they make a point early on in the movie to talk about how, like, mean of a director Zach is.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not. He's the nicest Broadway director ever.
Yeah.
Like, nice. even from the beginning, like, he's not really mean at all.
I mean, there are definitely some moments where I'm thinking specifically people who don't work in the industry and haven't worked with, like, really mean or really nice directors, and so they just see Michael Douglas being like, hey, you, any ballet? And she's like, no, and he's like, then don't dance. She keeps dancing, and he jumps up and screams, don't dance, and she runs off, like, crying.
Yeah.
Like, I can see people being like, oh my God, he's vicious. Like, he's the worst person ever. And I'm like, that is a... one of the nicest
Broadway directors you would ever find.
And I'm like, hey, newsflash, everybody who isn't a performer, that's all directors. All directors are like this. It doesn't matter how nice they are or how mean they are in normal life, they're going to be like that. That's how all directors are. There are some that are definitely worse, and there are some that are definitely way kinder. But the average is that guy. He is an average director.
And also, before he decides on, like, the final eight, he, like, says to everybody, you all are incredible. I wish I could hire you all.
Yes.
But I can't. So
and he didn't have to say that.
No.
Yeah. No. He could have just been like, all right, time for the final thing. Yeah. Like, no. He sat there and made a point to be like, you're all amazing. You know, go home knowing that you're incredible. Like, you know, even if you don't get chosen, like, and you'll have to do that as a director. But he was kind of, he didn't even have to read off the names. He could have made his stage manager read it off to completely separate himself. Because I've seen people do that where they just give it to the stage manager and are like, you do it, so that they don't have to be the ones actually saying it to you that you go home. But no, he actually, like, did it. He took it on himself, and I thought that was cool. But yeah, so it ends with, you know, the people who were quote-unquote kind of, like, rejected, sent out, and then you get the beautiful one number at the end that I love and is gorgeous. You get everybody from the auditions back on stage to do just this beautiful final gigantic number, and it all ends in a kick line, which is how the stage production also ends. It ends with all of them doing a continuous kick line until the curtain goes.
I will say, nice. It was a great ending. However, I did marching band for 4 or 5 years. And anytime I see anything that is a standard block formation, my instant reaction is to look and see so many different things that are not lined up correctly.
There was only one person that I really noticed.
I noticed so many.
There was one person in the giant block who was doing something weird. I think it was that, like, instead of saying in a straight line and kicking, they kind of went side to side.
To stay in one place, I saw that.
As they kicked, and I was like, ooh. That was the one person that I was like, you gotta get together, man. Like,
I don't know, that part was hard for me just because I kept noticing how much of it just looked like a... To me, it definitely was a block structure, but to me, it just looked like a cluster of people just kicking and dancing together. It just didn't look like a line to me. But, however,
well, I realized...
Got him.
I'm just being nitpicky because lines. I hate you, Russell.
Well, that was a chorus line. So,
Good movie.
Yeah, it was
pretty good. It was.
The budget for A Chorus Line was $25 million. Box office, $14.2
million. Oh, it lost half their money.
Wow. Big yikes.
It did not do very well. And again, part of the reason, and this is in my fun facts, but I'll mention it now. Part of the reason I do think that happened is that they specifically wanted, I think it was Richard Attenborough, specifically wanted all nobodies for the people, like, auditioning, for all, like, the chorus line people. So, like, obviously, you know, Michael Douglas was fine to be a big actor or whatever, but, like, everyone auditioning, he wanted to be a nobody.
He turned down Madonna.
He did. I saw that in the trivia.
Wow.
Madonna auditioned and he went, nah, like, nope, not gonna do it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
and I know, really cool. No, I'm thinking of a Little Shop. That was a different actor. But he just wanted all nobodies. But the problem with that is that then you only have, what, one big actor that is going to potentially attract people, and that's Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Whereas in Little Shop, you have all these people that people know.
Yeah, you don't have that actor.
You don't have the actor draw. Yeah. Like, so that's part of why I think they lost some money. And then partially that they kind of couldn't decide whether or not they wanted to make it, let's change it into a romance, or whether or not they wanted to focus on the dancers, which is what you're supposed to do. And so, like, they kind of just went halfway between both, where instead of just diving straight into one side. And I think that's part of it.
I think it's just such a niche movie. I think that theater people are going to like it, and that's it.
Yeah, so, well, really any performing artist would like this. I know for a lot of actors that I know and that I'm friends with, this is one of their favorite shows, because they're like, this is one of the most, like, real representations of what an audition process is like, what's going through everybody's, like, minds, you know, weird things a director might ask you to do. Like, you know, it's just, it's all over the place, but it's real. So we'll do all our guessing games at the very end, but let's move on to Samuel's pride of life over
Little
here.
Little Shop of Horrors.
So this one came out the very next year, 1986. It was directed by your boy Frank Oz. He's coming back. And written by Howard Ashman. And it stars Rick Moranis as Seymour Krelborn, Ellen Green as Audrey, and Levi Stubbs as Audrey 2. And you can watch this with an HBO Max subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Prime Video, YouTube, Google Play, iTunes, or Apple TV. And the IMDb summary for this movie says, a nerdy florist finds his chance for success and romance with the help of a giant man-eating plant who demands to be fed. Samuel.
All right, so this movie is directed by Frank Oz, who we all know and love as Yoda. He's also done a bunch of stuff with Muppet, Sesame Street, Big Puppeteer, and he also did Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which we did like a month ago. Mm-hmm. He directed. So that's Frank Oz. It was written by Howard Ashman. He's done a lot of work with Alan Menken, writing the book for him. He wrote Oliver and Company with him, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin.
Oh, Oliver and Company.
And then Alan Menken, of course, did the music. And what hasn't Alan Menken done?
Everything Disney ever.
He did Oliver and Company, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Newsies, Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Home on the Range, Enchanted, Tangled, etc., 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 etc.
Etc.
Etc., etc., etc.
All of your favorite Disney musicals are Alan Menken.
More than likely.
Well, yeah, I mean, because we talked about last night that Somewhere That's Green was just a prequel to A Part of Your World. Like,
yeah, but Part of Your World was based on Somewhere That's Green.
Yes, like, they are the same song, just... like,
different lyrics.
Just different
same
lyrics.
Same song, different lyrics.
That's it. They are the exact same song. Like, they even, I think they might even be in the same key, because it's like, somewhere that's green, part of your world. It's the same exact thing. Like, they are the exact same. But yeah, so Little Shop is crazy. And this version was actually a different ending that I actually liked better, but some people didn't. Because this one is a happy ending, at least the one we watched, as opposed to the super dark ending that we saw in the stage play, because we went and saw Samuel and John both in this production. I know Sam has been wanting to do this one again. Sam was Seymour, John was Mushnick.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, so this one, this one's wild. So basically, so complaints I saw about this one. Complaints that I saw were for the most part that the ending that we saw, the happy ending, ruins the idea that this is based on the idea of a Greek tragedy, because there's the three girl Greek chorus constantly commenting on everything, popping in and out to introduce different scenes, and it's supposed to be just like getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and this guy is getting built up by this terrible thing, and then everyone gets destroyed by it. You know, Greek tragedy style. I can't say
Greek tragedy.
Yeah, Greek tragedy.
Tragedy and Greek tragedy.
I eventually got there.
You eventually found
Greek
it.
Tragedy. Okay.
Greek tragedy.
I had to think about it very hard.
That was a John level flub. Like, that was like...
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Yes.
Homage.
Yes, it's an homage to you, John.
Because I haven't made a huge mess up yet.
So that was the biggest complaint I saw, was that they didn't like that this completely changed that and made it like instead a weird hero's journey but with a chorus. And I'm like, you can have a hero's journey with a chorus. There's like the Odyssey, I'm pretty sure, has a chorus.
I like the dark ending better personally.
I like this ending better.
None of the endings are written very well.
No.
When we did the stage play, that's what we said when we read the book, when we did our first read through. It was like, the whole play is great, and then everything after Audrey dies is just wild.
Well, like, it all just, like, happened so fast and didn't make any sense, and I was
and
like...
And she's, like, feed me to the plant.
And, I'm like, wait, whoa. We never said we were doing that. And then she's like, nah, go ahead and do it. And it's, what?
Still the weirdest.
None of the endings to it are great. Although the alternate ending to the movie is pretty good because you get to see Audrey 2 just destroy New York City. And that's a lot of fun.
Which that's more fun.
So wait, y'all watched the good ending version of the movie?
Yes, we did.
Well, no, we watched the original ending. The one where everything ends happy.
Because I would say the one that I watched had the whole
New York
tearing down New York thing.
So we got two different endings that we watched.
Alternate ending.
Yeah, I watched the alternate ending.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Because I do like that it has two different endings. I personally liked the happier ending just because I hated the stage ending so much. Like, I really and truly, like, I was kind of on board, which Little Shop isn't my favorite musical to begin with, but I was kind of on board until that moment of the stage show, and I just went, okay, like, you lost me. I'm out of it for the whole rest of it. And...
What, did my acting not sell it for you?
Everyone's a critic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want me to answer that question?
Oh, boy. Next up for the podcast.
Yeah, I didn't love it. It didn't grab me. It ended with that weird Don't Feed the Plant song that I was just not convinced by. I was just kind of like, this just looks like we had to end the show with a song, so we're just going to write a quick song to fit in here. Whereas this one, the Mean Green Mother song was so good, and I loved it.
Mean Green Mother is a fun song.
It was so cool. I loved the whole thing.
Mean Green Mother from Outer Space.
Oh, which, he was awesome.
Which in the off-Broadway version, I believe, is bad. Yeah. I looked it up. That is actually the name. It is just called Bad, where Audrey 2 just sings how he is the Big Green Mother. But I don't think they could have... I don't know why they didn't use that for the title. Copyright.
I mean, well, he does go, and I'm bad. So, like,
so,
you know.
So bad.
Yeah, so it makes sense to call it Bad. But yeah, I loved that. I think because I love that song so much, I was just down with the happy ending. Because I was like, this is just a really cool song, and I really like it. And they didn't have it in the stage show, and I was very bummed. But, or if they did, y'all cut it out. But
it wasn't in our book.
It wasn't in the
book. That's so lame. It's so good.
That's such a good song. And that's actually the first song I ever heard from Little Shop of Horrors was that
really?
Song. Yeah, it was that song. Because I remember like I was like I had heard of the movie a while back and I had never seen it or anything. So I was like, oh, let me just like, I don't know, look up like a Little Shop of Horrors. And that was the first video that came up on YouTube. I just clicked on it. I was like, okay, I think I understand what's going on here. I'm probably not going to watch the movie, but, like, I understand it. And then last night I watched the movie.
And then last night you watched it. But, yeah, I liked this version really just because of the song and because I didn't understand at all why Audrey was like, feed me to the plant. And I was like, okay, this doesn't make any sense at all. And I think it's dumb. But I would have liked to watch him terrorizing New York City. That I would watch. Absolutely. Because that's cool. But, anyway, so forgot to print off my Wikipedia notes, so I have it on my phone because I felt like I was taking too long. So, yeah, so the Greek chorus first comes out, which I love the Greek chorus. They were so cool. The urchins also, I pointed out, I recognized one of them if you've ever seen My Wife and Kids or Everybody Hates Chris. Yeah, she was one of the urchins and she's amazing. But yeah, so they're warning the audience that something is, you know, something's coming. And Seymour and Audrey work at Mushnick's Flower Shop in a, you know, kind of sketchy neighborhood called Skid Row in New York City. And then they sing about how they can't escape the neighborhood, which has just the wonderful song Skid Row. I love Skid Row. That's a good song. And they are, you know, struggling from lack of customers. And so Mushnick decides to just close the store. But then Audrey suggests that he may have more success by displaying this unusual plant that Seymour owns. Where did he get the plant? He kind of explains it. With the beam of light from space, I guess he just appeared in front of him.
Behind him.
Total eclipse of the sun. And it
total
just
eclipse of the
up.
Sun.
Just like, oh, look, there's a plant over here.
See, that's also the song that I forgot about in the stage show, and I also forgot about watching the movie because it's not a song. It's basically him just kind of talking over music about how he.
Yeah, it's the Greek chorus singing it, and then Seymour just.
I have forgotten about it both times I've seen it because it's such a forgettable song and I just don't enjoy it. And so I forget how he got the plant every time. I'm like, how did he get the plant? And they're like, that whole song talked about it. And I'm like, oh, the song I didn't care about? Okay, cool.
Excellent.
Solid.
The song I forget about immediately. So it attracts a customer immediately, which I've always liked that, that literally they put it in the window and immediately he goes, what is that strange and interesting plant? Like, oh, okay, I have to buy $100 worth of roses then. That's always been very funny to me. So he dubs it Audrey 2. And, you know, so attracting business to the shop, the plant starts to wither. And then Seymour, after pricking his finger, discovers that Audrey 2 needs blood to thrive, which I'm gonna just say it. That grossed me out so bad. It's always been so gross to me. Like, I don't do well with blood or anything like that. And so, like, watching him, like, drip it or squeak. I can't even talk about it. Like, it's so gross. It grossed me out every time you saw him doing anything like that with the plant. I was like, I'm ready to dive out the window. Like, I can't watch this anymore.
Dive into Audrey.
Like, honestly, like, just go ahead and eat me. My life is over. But yeah, so Audrey 2 grows really fast after that. And then Seymour becomes kind of like a celebrity. Meanwhile, Audrey is suffering at the hands of her abusive, sadistic boyfriend, Oren Scrivello, played in this by the one and only Steve Martin.
Love it.
Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. So the awesome. Second he showed up, my favorite part of the movie was from when Steve Martin showed up to when Steve Martin died. And then that was my favorite part of the movie, was just him being absolutely insane. It was so good.
Yeah, Steve Martin is absolutely incredible.
He was so good. Like, he commits so hard when he does anything. And
apparently,
it's just
when
so
he
good.
Took this role, Frank Oz asked him to do the role, and he said, after reading the script, he said, "I will do it if you will let me not be the Fonz."
Yeah.
Because apparently that was the whole, you know, all the leather-clad guys and all this imitating the Fonz. So he was like, let me just do my own thing and I'll do it. And Frank Oz was like, sure, you're Steve Martin. Of course I'll let you do your own thing.
Steve
and
Martin.
That's what happened.
Steve Martin, thank you for not being the Fonz.
Yes, he decided instead of being the Fonz, I'll be Elvis. And that's what I'll be.
Elvis, but also... sadistic.
A sadistic.
Apparently
Elvis.
All the Elvis stuff was basically improv'd.
Oh yeah,
completely.
I mean, Steve Martin just improvises all the time, and people just let him because he's so good at it. They're like, he can just do whatever he wants, like whatever. No, as soon as he pulled up in that green screen on his motorcycle, like just zooming, and every time he jumped off his motorcycle and then it stopped afterwards, like on the street
by itself,
I was like, this is perfect. I love everything that's happening.
He's just such a crazy character.
Like, oh, it's so good. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. So Audrey has feelings for Seymour and secretly dreams of running off with him to the suburbs in Part of Your World. and then Seymour keeps feeding Audrey to his own blood. And then Seymour soon attempts to ask Audrey out, but she turns him down because she has a date with Oren, who is revealed to be a dentist in the best scene ever. Which, by the
Truly.
Way, that scene of shooting through the mouth to see him and like the urchins but dressed as nurses behind him.
That was an incredible
was
scene.
Such a good shot.
Yeah,
like
that shot
so
was
good.
So awesome.
Yeah, so after Seymour closes up shop, Audrey 2 starts talking to Seymour and demanding more blood than Seymour can give. The plant proposes that Seymour just murder someone in exchange for fame and fortune, as well as the ability to woo Audrey. Seymour at first is like, nah, but then he sees Oren like literally abusing Audrey and is like, alright, maybe I can do it.
Arguably my favorite number.
Just to this guy. But yeah, so after Oren...
Yeah, get it.
After Oren finishes with also the best scene ever with him and Bill Murray. It was so good. Like, just even the small choices that Bill Murray made were just oh so good. Like him squatting in the chair because he was too excited, like waiting in the waiting room. He couldn't sit like a normal person. He squatted and then like interrogated the girl who comes out about like what he did and was like, oh yeah, you know, they have to do that to remove the jaw. And I was like, what? Like,
what is happening?
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's that hilarious moment when, like, the absolute sadist who, like, thrives on people's pain.
Meets
and, like,
the absolute masochist.
Masochist who loves pain and, like, it does not mix.
No,
like,
kink versus
is, like,
kink
have
does
to go.
Not work. It
One
was
has
so
to
good because Steve Martin is just getting angrier and angrier and trying to hurt him more and more.
Bill Murray's like, yes!
Yes, he's just loving all of it. And then he stops and he's like, what? And Steve's like, get out. Like, so angry.
You're not allowed in this practice.
It was so good. I loved it. And apparently, so the whole scene outside of the, well, most of the scene was scripted, but nothing after, like, he started operating on him in the chair was scripted. So everything Bill Murray did after he started messing with him was all just completely improvised. All he was told was, make pleasurable sounds, and that's it. And so Bill Murray just ran with it and just, like, oh my gosh, perfect. It's so good.
Yeah,
and
Bill Murray is one of my favorite comedic actors
so
of all time.
So good. And you put two of the so best comedians of all time good. In one scene where they have so opposing kinks and are like... Dude. It was just such a good scene. I loved it.
I'm kind of sad that that scene wasn't in the stage play at all.
It was in the original movie. In the original movie, I think I have it written here somewhere. It's an actor that I've actually heard of played like the masochistic patient, but I can't remember. Oh, it was Nicholson. Yeah, it was Jack Nicholson. Yeah.
Really?
Jack Nicholson?
Well,
played the patient?
Yeah, it says, coincidentally, Little Shop of Horrors 1960 was Nicholson's first movie role in which he plays the masochistic patient.
What?
So wild. Nicholson plays Bill Murray's part in the 1960 version.
That's crazy. I can't believe that.
Yeah, I saw that and was like, what? But that's part of another fact that I'll get to later. So after he finishes with that, who requested a long, slow root canal, Seymour draws a revolver on Oren but can't bring himself to use it. Oren, who abuses his nitrous oxide, puts on a type of Venturi mask to receive a constant flow of the gas, but then breaks the valve, and Seymour watches as he asphyxiates. Which in this one, it made a lot more sense than, like, in the stage show why he, like, couldn't get it off. Because in the original, it was just sort of, like, a stretchy thing that goes on, like, in the show I watched with y'all, whereas in this, it's this whole contraption with, like, metal and shit, and I was like, okay, I could see that getting stuck on somebody.
It's, like, locked on. Like...
Yeah, like, it's yeah. on there. Especially,
we do what we could with our props department on
that. Well, plus, I imagine that probably also in the stage show, when the valve breaks, maybe you can't take it off until you turn, like, the nitrous oxide off.
Yeah, it could have been.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. So if you can't turn it off, it can't, like, leave your body, which is a huge manufacturing error and should have been thought about.
Well, but, I mean, he made it himself.
He made it himself? Well, that makes
that's
sense.
That's one of the is that he made it himself.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
I love that Danielle just, like, went into, like, the logistics of, like, that's a huge manufacturing error, and I think they should have filed a case.
Well, I mean, thousands of people die from workplace accidents every year. Let me just take a moment.
In a world of OSHA violation.
But, yeah, so he asphyxiates. Seymour then dismembers his body and feeds it to Audrey, too, which he dismembers his body with a not very sharp-looking axe, so I have to imagine that took a long time to hack him up.
He's also not a very big fella.
No.
So these swings are not coming down with a lot of force either.
Also, was that... I feel like that wasn't the way that Mushnick found out in the play.
It's not.
No.
Yeah, I saw him walk up and see it, and I was like, okay, this is different. Like, he did not just walk up and see him hacking up his body. I feel like he just, like, how did he find out? Did he find
little red dots all over the linoleum?
I thought it was that there was, like, an object.
Little red dots, and then there was the jacket in the trash
jacket
can.
Jacket in the trash can. That's what it was.
Bloody jacket in the trash can.
Okay. Because I was like, I know he left something of, like, some evidence behind that he found, and that was it. But yeah, so he dismembers him, feeds it to Audrey too, who is enormous. But Mushnick sees it, who then runs away in fear. Audrey, feeling guilty over Oren's disappearance, is comforted by Seymour, and they admit their feelings to each other. And that night, Mushnick confronts Seymour about his death and holds him at gunpoint, blackmailing him into turning the plant over and leaving town. And with no choice, Seymour begins to tell him how to care for Audrey too, but before he can reveal the secret, the plant swallows Mushnick whole in supper time.
Goodbye, John.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
That death in the stage version for ours was something else.
Well, because didn't Seymour in the stage version go like, oh, it's there. Yeah, there
I liked
there's
it better
something
in the stage
in there.
Version. Seymour lures him into the plant.
Yeah.
And then John, like, reached into the plant, and the puppet was, like, eating him, and his legs were going everywhere. And then he slid down the ramp, and it was great.
Well, what's funny is that, like, I'm in, like, the way we had the Audrey 2 plant set up was that there was a wooden plank and then a like a little slide portion mm-hmm. that's supposed to deposit you on these like little mats that we added yeah. later because we realized we had to do a bunch of stunts with that. Especially for Seymour's death.
Because yeah, he has to dive.
So we had to add mats at the end. So, but yeah, no, I'm sitting there and like I'm in a button up, so I don't have a lot of good like. There's friction with the buttons and stuff. So I'm sitting there, so I just lay on top of this wooden plank, and I have to wait to feel the jaw hit my butt, so I can kick my legs up and yell. And I have two other ensemble members holding my arms the whole time, waiting to yank me down because I physically cannot slide down the portion of Audrey because he's too wide.
Quotes out of context. I have to wait for the jaw to hit my butt.
I was about to say. That was so good.
John, you've made gold today.
Thank you, Russell.
So, Seymour, returning in time to save Audrey. Well, he's become really famous. He's been on all these like radio shows and stuff since right. Mushnick is gone, and therefore there are no witnesses to the crime he's committed. He gets there in time to save Audrey and escapes the store with her. She was like kind of torn up. Like her dress was kind of torn. She had a little bit of blood here and there. But I was also like, in the stage show, nothing was on her when she came out, and she was just dying. Like something, like I had to assume maybe the thing's poisonous and it just like poisoned her as soon as she went inside.
In reality, we just didn't have time to get makeup on her.
Like any blood or anything. I was gonna say, just put someone inside.
There was really no way to do it.
Just put someone up inside the plant, squirt some blood on her, and then just like have them go back out.
Someone just like a whole like toothpaste tube of just
a tube of fake blood.
Just Haley back there. Just
rip my shirt.
Spray
rip my shirt.
Her down. Yeah, just like rip the shirt open a little bit. Great, go. Like push her back out. No. Yeah. So she looked kind of tore up. Her honestly, and I said this last night. Her wig looked better after she was in the plant because it was so lemon headed for the entire show.
It was,
and then after she was in the plant, it was kind of messy, but it looked good. Like it was like a good messy, you know, like it was purposeful. And I was like, okay, like just keep it like that. Don't do whatever you're doing otherwise. He explains that he fed the plant to become successful and win her heart, and then he discovers that she's always loved him. So he's approached by an executive from a botanical company and is offered a contract to breed Audrey to and sell it worldwide. He's horrified, so he drives Martin away and realizes that he has to destroy Audrey 2 for the sake of humanity. So he returns to the shop, best song ever, Mean Green Mother from Outer Space, and he traps Seymour and destroys the shop, but then Seymour grabs an exposed electrical cable and electrocutes the plant, and the whole shop blows up. But somehow, Seymour's fine and reunites with Audrey. They go to their, classic picket fence home in the suburbs. And as they arrive in their home, you can see a smiling, tiny Audrey 2 bud can be seen among the flowers in the front yard because it is not over. Now, the cut that John saw. So in this cut ending, the plant attacks Audrey, in the process revealing to her that it also ate Oren and Mr. Mushnick. Seymour comes and pulls her from its jaws, but it's too late. She's mortally wounded, and as she's dying, she tells him what the plant said, and then Seymour obviously confesses. Audrey requests that Seymour feed her to the plant so Seymour can earn the success he deserves, and in a way, she'll always be with him.
And that's the stage version.
And then after fulfilling her dying wish, he attempts suicide by jumping off the roof of a building, only to be stopped by Patrick Martin, who offers to sell Audrey 2s, and has already grown a smaller Audrey 2 from one of the cuttings that he took earlier. He also warns Seymour that his consent isn't necessary, as plants are considered to be in the public domain. And
nice.
So,
classic.
Realizing that Audrey 2 is planning global domination, Seymour climbs down from the roof to destroy the plant. Returning to the shop, he confronts and tries to kill Audrey 2. Song comes up again. Who tears down the shop, fishes him from the rubble, and eats him alive. The plant then spits out Seymour's glasses and laughs. and then the three chorus girls appear in front of a large American flag and tell how, although Audrey 2 buds became a worldwide consumer craze, the buds grew into an army of monstrous plants who took over the earth, and then giant Audrey 2 plants are shown destroying cities, toppling buildings, and eating people. The army attempts to fight the buds off as they ascend the Statue of Liberty, and Audrey 2 eventually bursts through the movie screen and presumably eats all the viewers. That is the ending that John saw.
So I was saying, y'all, I'm like, electrocuted in the blew up, what?
That's why I went to the other ending. I was like, I know that you're not going to know anything about what we're talking about. Yeah, and honestly, that all that craziness, I would have liked that ending better than just the stage ending where you just kind of assume that all this stuff happens. But if you actually get to see it, like what John saw, I think it would be a lot more enjoyable,
I think what they did in the movie would have been smart is a visual aid alongside the ending number.
Yeah, just like, yeah, something to show just the destruction and chaos that's happening would have been really cool. And instead, they just didn't have that. The problem
is that's really hard to do on stage.
It is.
So,
I mean, our
just art, make 10 more plants and have them flood the audience, whatever.
That's what I was going to say. Put people in plant costumes and have them run out into the audience. Yeah. Like, that would be cool. And then
all the lights go down.
Here's the thing. And then it's just boom. That's what we did. We had people in plant audience. You may not have noticed it, but we had people in plant costumes all surrounding the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we weren't in plant costumes. We were covered in plants. Well, that was supposed to be the
plant. Right, like, not costumes. In full Audrey 2 costumes, but, like, everybody in plant, like, in the
I know everyone was covered in, like, vines. Yeah,
they were. And we were zombies. Supposed to be one big Audrey 2, was the thing, is we were all part of the plant.
We were
surrounding the audience and stuff, yeah.
I never gathered that.
Because it was all the people who had already died.
Right.
Yeah. So I assumed they were in some sort of weird plant hell, and that's why they look like plants.
You know what's really cool about this story too, that I kind of just realized while Danielle was telling the end of the story, is actually this story is really synonymous with the creation myth of Adam and Eve. It's like except it's in this case Seymour is the one who's taking the forbidden fruit.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's so like right. That like temptation mm-hmm. of like you can just reach out and have whatever you want.
Yeah.
But is it the right choice to grab it?
Right.
If like the moment that okay, if I had a carnivorous plant in my house that I had to feed blood and it asked me to kill somebody, I would have taken an axe out to chop the
Yeah.
I would have taken an axe and I would have chopped the plant. I would have destroyed the plant.
Oh, like
the
moment,
like, it's like, well, your buddy John is down there. You should go kill him.
It's like, what? No.
What? I don't think so.
No.
So, I mean, but like in this case, Seymour decides to take the forbidden fruit.
Yeah. So, he's like, oh, okay. And it's because, you know, the plant has that strong temptation of, oh, the girl you want to be with mm-hmm. is dating this horrible guy. Would be a shame if something were to happen to him.
Bum, bum, bum!
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, that's actually really good. I hadn't even thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that was Little Shop, both versions.
Oh, yeah.
So, the budget for Little Shop was $25 million, although the producers and directors claimed that while the budget was $25 million, it only cost $30,000.
What?
That's what they claim. That's what they said, was that they budgeted $25 million and it only cost $30,000. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they claimed.
No way.
Wow. For two endings?
But think, most of the money probably went to the puppet.
Awesome.
Because they really didn't use much set. All the set was pretty much the same. It was like the street, the roof, the store. And that was like pretty much it.
They built one big set. It was on a back lot. It was just one big set.
Yeah, so they just moved to different places on the one set. So they didn't have to go to different locations. Like, dude, I don't know. It was also the 80s. Who knows?
Well, and there were a bunch of other movies like that, so they probably just pulled the set from other movies.
They could have definitely
They probably created that set from a bunch of different sets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, I do want to point out that there is absolutely no... Well, okay, there's a little bit of CGI with the motorcycle. But everything with Audrey 2 is puppetry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every last moment. Like, mm-hmm. which, I mean, looking at it, it looks incredible. Insane. Like, all the movement and, like, you said it took how many, like actors
let
to...
Let me figure out the exact number.
Yeah, because you said around 50.
I believe, but let me see. Let's see.
Like, just
unbelievable. Especially, like, in that last scene when that plant is huge and it's bigger than the room.
I mean, are you surprised? Like, well, wait, hold on. Was Frank Oz the voice or did he also move Yoda? Like, was he also? That explains it. Both. He was already a puppeteer, so he was like, we're going to make a giant plant puppet. Let's go.
So good. Unbelievable. It was
very well done.
That was some of the best puppetry I have, like, seen in anything.
It just looked so natural. So good. Like, it was incredible.
Because they actually moved the lips, too. Yeah, they didn't just move the mouth. The lips all had, like, muscles, and like, they moved like an actual person saying things.
Yeah.
So I was like, it looks insane. It looks
Meanwhile,
so cool.
Our Audrey 2 was just a bunch of lining it.
Oh, this is cool.
Two, and one guy literally just pushing two levers to open and close the upper mouth.
Yeah, we had one puppeteer. While developing the mouth of the plant for the dialogue scenes and musical numbers, Oz Conway and his crew struggled to figure out how to make the plant move convincingly. We kept trying and trying, and it didn't work. The solution presented itself while reviewing test footage. When the film ran backwards or forwards at a faster than normal speed, the footage looked more convincing. They realized they could film the puppet at a slower speed, making it appear to move faster when played back at normal speed.
Oh.
By slowing it down, it looked like it was tossing really fast. We then went, holy cow, look at that, we can do it.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Let's see.
And that actually makes sense, because that was something I was thinking about the whole time, was like, his mouth, like, is a giant mouth. It's got to be so heavy.
Yeah.
And it's opening and closing really fast, so I was like, what are they doing? And that makes sense now.
Performing the plant in its largest form required 60 puppeteers.
Oh my god.
60. Wow.
60 puppeteers, y'all.
That reminds me of The Dark Crystal. Have you guys ever seen The Dark Crystal?
I know of it. Yeah, I've not seen it.
It's an amazing, like, Jim Henson film. Yeah, and I mean
it's like a ton of puppetry.
Yeah, the puppetry.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's crazy. It's so amazing. Like, it just reminded me of that. Like,
and they ain't cheap puppets. This ain't the Muppets. Like, they're really well done.
Serious, like,
yeah.
They're even the actual human. There actually is a human in that movie. They turn the human into a puppet.
Nice.
Yep.
Like, the human is like, looks clearly human, and like, the human's like walking around, and it's all puppetry being done. It's
that's
great.
Insane.
Anyway, sorry. I'll just
No. There was a I was saying, I know I said to you last night, Russell. Not only the puppetry, but also the lighting on the puppet made it just look so otherworldly and insane. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And it accented all the points that you wanted to look at, which is the fact that, like, you know, all the different, like, muscles, I just say muscles, I know it's not, like, actually muscles, but all the different, like, muscles of, like, his lips and everything are all, like, moving specifically, like, all this stuff, and the lighting just brought in so much more to it. Like, it was one of the first moments in, like, any of the movies we've watched where I've been like, that lighting kills. Like, all of that. It was so good.
It was incredible.
So good. So... film. Let's guess first, and then I'll throw y'all some facts. Right. So, first off, starting with A Chorus Line, critical score on Rotten Tomatoes. What do y'all think?
For A Chorus Line?
Mm-hmm.
Considering it didn't do very well, I'm going to say 51%.
Okay.
Go with 43.
Okay.
I'm going to go a little higher. I think this is one of those movies that does a little better to the audience. I'm going to say 65.
John, you are very close. It's a 40%.
What?
40% critical score. You were very close.
I can't believe that. That's so unfortunate.
I honestly do think it's just because they changed so much from the stage production that people were like, ugh, no. But now for the audience score.
Not much higher. I'm going to go with 49.
I think it's going to be a good bit higher. I think it's going to be around 65%.
I don't know. I'm gonna say right at 60%.
You were closer by one. It is 62.
62.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I mean, that's what I expected for the first score. So I guess I should have saved my score for the second one.
Save it for the next one. All right. So Little Shop critical score.
I think it's gonna be pretty high. A lot of people really like this movie.
Yeah, people.
I'm gonna say like 87.
Okay.
And people love Rick Moranis too.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with 90. I was gonna say 87, but I'm not gonna copy Samuel. So
I'm gonna go with 88.
Oh my John, God. You got it exactly! It was wow. 90, right on the dot. It was 90.
Nice.
And the audience score for Little Shop?
95.
I'm going to actually say it's going to be a little bit lower. I'm going to say 84.
Okay.
I was also thinking it was going to be a little bit lower, actually. I'm going to say 88. I'm going to do the same one.
Sam, you were closer. It's a 79.
I thought so.
I knew it was going to be lower. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's one of those things where like someone like might see it and be like, that's gross. Oh, like Danielle, look at the blood. Just be like, that's disgusting. Like the music is interesting and like the story
and
is
let's
all
not,
right.
But... let's not skip right past the grossest part of the movie, which was Audrey's voice. Let's not ignore that.
Yeah.
Her voice was terrible.
That was pretty rough.
You know, most of the time...
bit grating.
Even if you do a good show of something, it's never going to be as good as, you know, the original... But I will say, our Audrey was better than the movie.
I agree.
Straight up. Mm-hmm. Straight up, for sure.
Kayla, we're giving you a shout out.
Yeah.
So, chorus line IMDb score out of 10.
For a chorus line?
Yes, for a chorus line.
For a chorus line. Chorus line score out of 10.
For a chorus line?
Yes, for a chorus line.
Shut up. I hate you. 8.7.
Okay.
I'm going to say 4.5.
Yeah. I'm going to say 5.7.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
Did you think it was not for a chorus line,
John? Did you forget that?
Did you forget right after you said for a chorus line and we said yes and then we made fun of you that it was a chorus line?
I got some in my head.
No take backs.
No take backs. 8.7 is your final answer.
No.
You don't get a choice. Danielle, what's the score?
Well, what were y'all's again?
4.7.
And I said 4.6, right?
No.
I thought you said 5.7. You said 5.7, and then you said...
I think it was 4.7 or 4.6, whichever one.
Okay, either way...
Five.
Either way, Sam is closer, because it was a 6.2.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. Oh, that's a little higher than Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it was higher. And then Little Shop, IMDb.
8.7.
Is this for a Little Shop?
Yeah.
Yes, this is for a Little Shop.
I'm going to stab you. I'm going to crawl across the table.
7.2.
Okay.
I'm going to say... 8.2.
You're closer, Sam. It is 7 on the dot. 7 right on the dot. There, those two are actually pretty close. 6.2 and 7. They are not far. So, I found some little facts here. But first, I'm actually going to let y'all know what some people thought about these. So, for a chorus line, the general consensus is like, all right. You know, it's 78% rated at 5 stars, so not bad. And I pulled... I think I just pulled one positive and one negative. What are y'all feeling today as far as what you want to start with?
Always hitting with the positive first. Yeah. Because the negative ones are always so funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So positive is from a guy named Rich J. Wilson. And it's titled, I Was Wrong. It's Not Like Glee at All. I bought this as a present for my wife and was initially reluctant to watch it. Oh, is it one of those musicals where people just burst into song for no reason? No thanks. However, when I did get to sit down and watch it, I was pleasantly surprised. It feels more like a play with its tight structure and focus on interaction between characters given the limited set. There is something voyeuristic about the film, even though it is set on a stage. It is almost as if we are watching the bits... It's almost as if we are watching the bits the audience shouldn't see. We see the raw nature of their imperfections and insecurities that are hidden in a lavish production and are exposed by the format of rehearsal and selection. Not a classic, but a nuanced study of life on the chorus line. 4 stars.
That was a good review.
I thought that was really good.
That was a really good review.
Yeah.
Wasn't like Glee at all.
I love that was the title. It's not like Glee at all.
That's a good thing.
So this is from Julia. She titled it First Timer. Well, I have found at times the previews to movies are a bit misleading. I thought the movie was going to be so different than what it was. I wished I could get my rental fee back. I would not have sat in the theater and finished watching it and would have asked for my money back. I understand it was a successful movie for its time. No, it wasn't. But not so much for me this time. I really did not like it, fell asleep watching it, and turned it off before it was over. Although, I must say, the dancing part was pretty fabulous. 1 star.
The dancing part was pretty
fabulous.
Fabulous.
So just the several dancing parts, not that one dancing part.
The whole movie is a dancing part.
I was going to say, like, A, multiple parts, and B, if you saw the fabulous dancing part, that's going to be at the very end.
So I mean, a lot of the dancing was, I mean, let's not forget about I Can Do That. That was some fabulous dancing. I Can Do
That
dancing.
Was
a
fabulous. That was incredible dancing.
Yes. He just swings in on a rope from nowhere. For like, no it reason. Was so
like,
good.
Like, it cuts to, like the other shot with what's her name, Cassie. And then it goes back to him, and he's just on a rope now.
On a rope.
It was Tarzan. So good. I loved it.
I Can Do That.
It was such a perfect suspension of disbelief, almost animated movie style, like cartoon thing. I loved it so much. It was so good. And so for Little Shop, the reviews are a lot better. 86% are 5 stars. So we'll go positive first. This is from Coco P. And it's titled...
Nice.
It's titled, Timeless Movie! ! This is an awesome film, and what makes it more enjoyable is how 30-plus years later, the special effects still hold up. Mm. It's amazing to me how well Audrey 2 is portrayed in this film. If they were ever to do a remake and were to use CG effects, I still don't think it would hold a candle to this film's movie magic.
Yeah, no,
I remember viewing a behind-the-scenes clip on how they used animatronics. Very impressive and ingenious, the strategies they used to impress its audience members. This film is slightly different from the play. There are some songs added and some missing in comparison. Both the play and this film are both worth a view. Highly recommended. 5 stars.
All right. Oh, yeah.
And then, so I've got a couple of different negative reviews here, but the reason I pulled two is because one is from the positive ending and one is from the ending that you saw.
Oh, okay.
So I pulled two. Nice. So, first one is from the positive ending. This is, from a user called MazRec, as in MA'S, Rec, and it's titled Disappointed. I love this movie, but was confused and did not want the one with this ending. I thought I had made the right choice. So disappointing. No way to tell that this is the crazy sci-fi ending with all being destroyed. Even if I thought I'd let my older grandkids see this, absolutely not this version. 1 star. And then...
Wait.
What?
You gave it 1 star because the ending is...
Yes, like because he didn't like the ending.
Well, because he didn't get the ending he thought he was going to
see. Yeah, yeah. He or she got the happy ending and they were like,
They didn't get the ending they thought they were going to get. So that kind of makes sense. That's more of a product review, I think.
Kind of. They're saying but they are also still like saying that ending
right,
sucks.
But they were saying like there's no way to tell... There's no way to tell that this was...
Yeah, there's no way to tell,
so I think
like,
the 1 star was more like a product. Like, this product
kind
is
of.
1 star.
So this one is the dark ending. This is by Anthony Luton, and it's titled Dark Shadows. I was shocked when the movie ended. I had no idea what director's cut meant. Here, it doesn't mean a longer version, but a completely different ending. It was too dark for me, and I'm longing for the happy, happy ending that most of us are familiar with. 1 star. So we got some people who love the happy ending, some people who hate the happy ending. Like, we got it in both directions.
As an added little bonus, which ending do you guys like best? Danielle?
If I had seen, I think, the really cool, like, all the effects of, like, you know, tearing up a city and, like, you know, the army trying to battle one as it climbs the Statue of Liberty and it bursting through the screen, I think I would have liked that better. Mm-hmm. But having seen it on stage, I really didn't like it at all. So I preferred the ending we saw, which was just kind of the happy ending that still has that sense of, like, it's not over when you see the little, like, bud of Audrey 2, like, hey, I'm still around, you know? Because it still gives that sense of, like, anything could happen.
Yeah, like, foreboding.
Yeah, like, oh, they think everything's over, but I'm still here, you know? So, I personally, having just seen the stage version that's the negative ending and then the movie version of the positive ending, I prefer the movie version of the positive ending, but I might say differently if I'd seen the director's cut.
I prefer the Everybody Dies ending.
What about you, John?
The attack on New York City was fantastic, so I have
and yeah, I think if I had seen that, I'd agree, but I just haven't seen that. And the one negative ending I saw, it didn't translate everything that was supposed to be happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my personal thing on it. I think if I had seen it, I would have liked it a lot better, but I just haven't.
Yeah, I think the ending with the attack on New York City is awesome because it's kind of that just like everything just got blown to hell.
Oh yeah, like, everything fell apart.
But I also do like, you know, the characters, and I hate to see everyone die. Like,
yeah,
that kind of sucks to see everyone die. So right. I think first from a story,
especially for someone with such a sad life as Audrey. Like, yeah. you just want her to be happy. Like, yeah. I just want her to have her tiny little house and stuff. Like, whatever.
Yeah, like, you want her to get what she wants.
Yeah.
So, like, from, like, a plot perspective, I prefer, like, the happier
You're
ending.
Staring at me.
From the plot perspective, I prefer a happier ending, but, you know.
Yeah.
Destruction's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen that ending, mm-hmm. but for the sake of the characters, I love the happy ending.
Go ahead.
Okay. I thought you had something to say.
I do, but it's whenever we're done with this segment.
Okay. I was just going to go through the fun facts next, so.
Yeah. So this is, I just want to get y'all's reaction to this
okay.
on the podcast, because I looked it up. So they are doing a remake of Little Shop of Horrors.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, boy.
It will be directed by Greg Berlanti.
Who is that?
You do not know who that is. He is most famous for his work on the CW.
Oh.
Including shows such as Dawson's Creek, Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and Riverdale.
No!
Oh, boy.
No!
The cast.
Oh, goodness.
Seymour Krelborn will be played by Taron Egerton.
Who is that?
He played Elton John in Rocketman.
I vaguely know who that is.
And he's the main character from Kingsman.
That's a solid choice.
Yeah, that's actually
I don't think that's bad. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean Rocketman. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's bad.
Lady Gaga dropped.
Oh, so she's not doing Audrey.
Audrey will now be played by
Oh no.
Scarlett Johansson.
What?
Okay.
Can she sing?
I don't know. I guess we're gonna find out.
If
what
she,
the heck?
Because Lady Gaga has pipes.
I
mean,
honestly, Lady Gaga would be perfect for Audrey.
She would be a flawless Audrey. She'd be perfect.
Scarlett Johansson.
Why is she doing Audrey?
I get the look.
Well, yeah, she has
the
look,
talent.
But I don't know if she can sing.
No,
like,
that's the problem.
The
vocal talent in question.
Specifically, like Somewhere That's Green is
you
just very,
tell
like,
me
soft.
DeVito's.
But you got to be able to wail for Suddenly Seymour. Like, yeah. You got to be able to really, like, go all over the place. You got to be able to belt, and I don't know if she could do that.
Billy Porter will be playing Audrey, too. Don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is either.
And Chris Evans will be playing Oren Scrivello.
What?
Chris Evans?
I mean,
you mentioned Chris Evans earlier. It all comes full circle.
Full circle.
Here, we predict the future.
It's going to be funny if it's not as impressive as the original puppetry.
Billy Porter, who's playing Audrey 2, should be fine. He's done a ton of Broadway stuff.
Say,
he won a Tony Award for originating a role in... he originated Lola in Kinky Boots.
Oh.
He has done Audrey 2 on stage.
So he's got a good voice.
So he has
experience.
Yeah.
So,
he played
so
Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
He'll be fine. If you can play Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, you have a fantastic voice. Like, his voice is ridiculous how high he has to go in that show.
I've never seen Jesus Christ
it's
Superstar.
Insane.
The music is
in
absolute.
There's
it
a
is
song.
Full 80s, but it is absolutely insane.
There's a song that he has to sing. I think it's Gethsemane,
yeah, Gethsemane,
where it's just this piercing high note that Jesus has to hit. That's like that's high for like for anybody. It's just it's wild up in the rafters. It's crazy.
Nice.
So if he played that, I think he'll be okay.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, so I found some fun facts about A Chorus Line. The ones for Little Shop are a little more fun, so I put more in there for Little Shop. So for A Chorus Line, we talked about that Madonna auditioned for the role, and she was rejected by John Hammond. He said no. And then again, like I said, Michael Bennett was originally really involved, but he left. And then he told the producer not to make the focus the relationship, and they did it anyway.
Oh.
John Travolta was considered for Zach.
Oh.
Yeah, so that would have been a lot different.
That.
Michael Douglas was good casting.
Oh, Michael Douglas
Michael
was
Douglas
great.
Was a great.
He was great. Because of her dancing experience, Audrey Landers, who played the El Paso girl, she was that one, is generally not seen in wide shots of the entire cast dancing, but is just inserted in close-ups because she is not a very great dancer.
Wow.
And a dance double is clearly seen in the long shots of the one singular sensation. It is not her. It is someone totally different.
Nice. Solid.
And for Little Shop, Mean Green Mother from Outer Space is the first Oscar-nominated song that contained profanity.
Wow.
And as a result, when this was performed at the Oscar ceremony by Levi Stubbs, it was edited, replacing the risque lyrics with lyrics cut from the final film, though included on the soundtrack. And then as part of the film's production, oh, I love this. The Audrey 2 plant was occasionally interviewed in character by the press, and on at least one occasion, the interview concluded with Audrey 2 eating the interviewer. I thought that was cool.
That's a great way to like promote your movie.
Oh, it's so good to just have a plant eat your favorite newscaster.
I gotta go see this film.
I gotta go see this.
That's so good.
Like, this is just a little more detail about the Bill Murray scene. So, the scene in the waiting room was filmed as scripted, but there was, like, literally no written dialogue when his character got into the dentist chair. So even his whole thing where he's just talking to him for, like, 5 minutes, just rambling about everything, and Steve Martin's, like, pulling out all his different things, and he's like, every time he sees a new one, that was all just, like, him. All he was told was just that he had to give ecstatic cries of pleasure. And over the course of the 2 days that he filmed, Murray kept riffing different ad-libs. So the editor had a really hard time putting together, like, a cohesive scene. And the dental tools used in Oren's office during that scene would again appear in Tim Burton's 1989 Batman. They are the tools used on Jack Nicholson's Joker after he fell in the chemicals, and that's how it said, coincidentally, Little Shop was Nicholson's first movie role, where he played the patient that had all those tools.
Wow.
So it was full circle. Came all the way back around.
That's strange. That's crazy. Yeah. Like how
and Jack Nicholson in the masochistic patient still looks like a psychopath.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson is a psychopath. That's the secret.
That's the secret.
So, the old woman, the amazing singer who begins the song Skid Row, like as she's walking down the alley, is a Tony-nominated singer and actress and comedian named Bertice, I think it's either Redding or Reading. It's been falsely reported that her voice is overdubbed by Michelle Weeks, who played one of the urchins. But in fact, Bertice actually sang her part live on the set. It wasn't one that was dubbed over.
That's awesome.
And it's actually her final film appearance before she died in 1991.
Wow.
Yeah. But she was the only one to actually, like, sing her part just completely live because they were like, we don't need to edit you. Like, just sing.
Your voice is great.
Like, you sound perfect. Go ahead. And last but not least, Eddie Murphy was considered to voice Audrey too.
Wow. That would have been a very different vibe.
That would have been a very different, very different Audrey too. So since these are plays, these will be a little bit easier. So we can do it real quick. Recasting. Who would we recast in... First, we'll start with the chorus line. Sam, I think if you could dance, you would be Larry. You would be just the guy that's like constantly handing out the... You're essentially the assistant guy. I think that's who you would be.
I mean, Danielle, you could have been multiple people. You could be Connie, though.
I'm not Asian. She has to be
Ramirez.
Asian.
Not Connie. Cassie.
Oh, Cassie. Cassie. I'm not as good a dancer as Cassie, but I could do my best. I could do my damnedest.
John
could be Zach.
See, I thought John could be Larry.
I guess you could be Larry.
You could be.
He's better dancer than me anyway.
Yeah. Russell, I think you would be...
Christian Bale.
Russell would be Christian Bale.
I was going to say Russell would be... Russell would be the husband of the husband and wife duo who's just constantly like, tell him about this thing.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Like,
I can see that.
That would be you.
See, I imagine Samuel as the really buff waiter who has to get to his job.
Oh, the waiter guy? Okay, I can see that.
He's just like, I have to leave in 20 minutes.
Better call in sick.
So awesome.
Okay, so unfortunately for Little Shop, we already know two of the characters because we've seen them
in it.
So
John's Mushnick.
John's Mushnick.
John is 1,000%.
John was born to be Mushnick.
Dude, John is one of the best Mushnicks you'll ever see.
Okay. He was better than this movie, Mushnick.
Yeah.
He was.
He was funnier. Yeah. Danielle would be Audrey. Russell would be the dentist.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. 100%. You would so be the
Guys,
dentist.
We have the cast right here.
We can do the dentist
play right now. Where's the script?
Frosty, you're off the tube. Learn your lines.
I'll double as Bill Murray's character.
Oh, my gosh. He comes back in to be the masochistic patient.
Murray.
Oh, it was so
good.
Honestly,
if we did that, that would probably be a beautiful scene between the two of us.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, and then we all know Sam is Seymour, obviously.
Suddenly
Seymour. Yeah.
So, we've talked about it a bit, but just to summarize. So why do we think Chorus Line just lost half its money?
Sorry, quick side note.
Yeah.
Ben would be Bill Murray. Moving on.
Ben would so be Bill Murray. Oh my gosh. Oh. He would so be Bill Murray. So, anyway, to summarize, why do we think these achieved the results that they did?
I really think it was because A Chorus Line's issue was that it was never going to appeal to large audiences, and it managed to piss off some theater purists.
That's very true, because even me watching it, I was like, there's things wrong with this.
I think it was a good movie. It was a well-done movie, but it didn't have an audience.
It didn't have, because it, for... I mean, granted, the things that it really hardcore committed to, which was the dancing, was incredible. Like,
right, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was phenomenal dancers. It was a good movie.
Well done.
It was a well done.
Yes.
Well made.
And even
movie.
And even the directing, like some of the shots that were done, the lighting that was done was beautiful.
The singing, of the singing was good. The sound mixing was rough.
Sound mixing was a little rough. Yeah.
Yeah, there were some moments where I was like,
but
I
that
I
was
can't
also
hear
the case. Well, there were also some issues with Little Shop with that, and I've noticed that that's kind of a thing with just older musicals where going from speaking right into singing is a very abrupt change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In both of the musicals, that was a problem.
Right, that was very true.
So I can't blame Chorus Line more than Little Shop.
I really think it was just... It just didn't have an audience.
I think that's true,
Didn't have an audience.
That makes sense. We also probably might, like, have been surprised by it because we, like... expected the bad
movie. We expected Dr. Dolittle Part 2, and then it was not Dr. Dolittle Part 2.
It was pretty good, honestly. Like,
no,
it was
like,
great.
Because I remember there were multiple times during the movie where Russell turned and went, and this is the bad movie? Like, he was genuinely, like checking.
Like, what the heck?
Like, is this one the bad one?
I mean, and plus, Chorus Line was engaging enough to where, like, I didn't realize I was an hour into the movie until I was an hour, until I, like, paused it to go to the bathroom, and I was like, I'm an hour into the movie.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Meanwhile, Dr. Dolittle, it feels like an hour, and you're like, I still got an hour and a half to go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Dolittle, that amazing classic that will be watched again by no one.
Especially not us.
No, especially not us.
No, we will not be rewatching it on that podcast.
No, but yeah, I agree. I think A Chorus Line had so many talented people, like very, very talented dancers. The whole the surprise number was insane.
Oh, I loved it so much.
With lighting, with camera, like, you know, cinematography, with just his skill in general was insane. So, like, you know, highly recommend for people who just love watching incredible dancing and some, like, genuinely good storytelling and, like, some very emotional performances, specifically by Paul.
Yeah, the message is so good behind that.
Yes, it's a very, the message of the show is great. It's just not for... It's not for, like he said, a general audience, which has always kind of been the problem with A Chorus Line, is that, you know, now it's sort of become, like, this reverent thing specifically for theater people because of everything Michael Bennett did and, like, everything with that whole history. It's become more of, like, a cult thing where everyone just sort of, like, loves it because of, you know, the history behind it. And because it is, on stage, a very, very good show and it's formatted well. But yeah, they dove too hard into trying to make it like a weird romance. But it wasn't even actually a romance because they didn't even get back together. It was just that they sort of reconciled and he casted her and that was like it.
I don't know if anyone else knows this, but did anyone else catch like them hinting towards like the subtle gay tension between like some of the auditionees and Larry?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, we got it, John.
Okay.
What do you mean subtle? Yeah. What do you mean subtle, John?
It was just never subtle.
What's his name just jumped right into Larry's arms like
He leaped like full on, like I feel like it was almost like it was almost crotchet face.
It was
level.
Almost
like
at crotchet.
Like it was like crotchet chest. He like jumped right onto him, and Larry like threw him back off. Like, he's what are you doing, dog?
Tone it down, so.
Yeah, he's like, calm down a little bit. Like,
calm down, bud.
Good enthusiasm, but less.
And meanwhile, you pan and the camera pans, and you see a very upset man in a purple crop top in the background.
Oh my goodness, it was so like it was so wild. But it was, like you said, it's not a bad movie.
No.
By any means. You know, there are definitely some mistakes with it, some powerful messages that they kind of missed, a.k.a. What I Did for Love.
Yeah, that...
That was a swing and a miss. They did not land it.
That made so much more sense the way you described
it. Oh, I know. The way in the show, it's beautiful. Yeah. And, like, it would always make me cry every night, because, like, as an artist, I'm like, I get it.
You get
like,
that.
This is it.
I kill myself for this.
But like, yeah, like, yeah, it's exhausting and it's going to probably be short lived, but I'm going to do it because I love it. Like, and it's such a good message. Whereas hers was just, I did everything because I loved him. And I was like, get out of here. This is not the message for the song. So other than that, if you really like the stage show and you really like just amazing dancers and some amazing singers and just genuinely good performances from a lot of the cast, then you should watch this. And Little Shop, obviously, I think did really well just because, one, it was... The performances was fantastic. Yeah. It also had more big-name actors that everyone knew. I mean, Steve Martin, Bill Murray, Rick Moranis, all these big guys. The
small roles, I mean, John Candy, just a little cameo. Jim Belushi. Jim Belushi just walks in at the end. Mm-hmm. You have Bill Murray just in this little role, like...
Like, there's all these actors that people love.
Everybody except for, like, the girls and Audrey are just huge actors.
I mean, and to be fair, even the urchins did a bunch of stuff. Like, I was looking them up, and, like, I mean, the woman that I immediately recognized, I was like, oh, I've seen her in a bunch of stuff. Like, awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it did well not only because of that, but also because of just the insane special effects are so good. And, you know, unlike A Chorus Line, it is a more streamlined story, and so it can, like... It can, you know, connect with a larger audience.
It has so much more of a plot than The Chorus Line does.
And its demographic is so much wider.
Yeah, I'll say it's a very generic, it's a generic plot. It's going to have, it's not attaching itself to a particular subject. It is just, on a base level, a sci-fi story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sci-fi Greek tragedy. Oh my gosh! I'm gonna chop my tongue out of my mouth if I can't talk. Okay.
Greek tragedy.
Yes, it is that, or or it is a hero's journey, depending on which one you watch.
Yes.
But yeah, so it appeals to a much larger audience than A Chorus Line, has so many big name actors, has honestly the music for Little Shop, both on stage and in the movie, are much closer than the music for A Chorus Line on stage and in the movie.
That's
in the movie, they leaned way more into like 80s synth and like all the stuff, whereas on stage, it's much more just kind of normal musical sound. Normal Broadway sound. So I think that was also part of it. It's like with Little Shop, it seems more unified with the stage production than it did with A Chorus Line. That is what I have to say about that. So out of 10 hats, what would y'all rate A Chorus Line?
I'd say 8 hats.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 6.5 hats.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Just because
6.5.
Especially after hearing what the message should have been with that song specifically, because that's one of the two songs I know.
It is arguably the most famous song in the movie.
From the whole movie, exactly. Yeah. And the fact that they kind of like lost like the message with that, like that would have just been so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention like the couple, like the little bit of sound issues, but so definitely 6.5.
I will go with a solid 7 hats. Mm-hmm. I knock off 1 point for ruining that song. I knock off another point one of the other sort of big change. Oh, the romance change that they did. Yeah. I knock off a big point for that. And then I'll knock off the other hat just because while the directing was actually pretty good, there were just a few kind of weird choices that were made that I felt like were meant for a purpose but didn't really land. Like that girl just randomly turning for no reason, and like a couple other random things like that where I was like, you know, I feel like it could have been done in a more engaging way or in just a way that made more sense. So I'll go with a solid 7. It's definitely one that I wouldn't be mad about if someone was like, oh my gosh, I really want to watch this. I'd be like, okay, you know, some cool dancing, I'll watch it, you know. Yeah. But while I would watch the musical on stage over and over again willingly, I probably wouldn't watch this one, like, just out of my own choice again.
Yeah.
Mostly just because I have such a soft spot for this stage show.
Yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of... the reason why I rated it, you know, a little higher than everyone else is because there were so many good little moments that kind of saved the film. Because, honestly, 2 points come off just for the weird subplot of the romance that I just
didn't think wasn't necessary to happen.
Yeah.
The characters, like, even though it was supposed to be just an ensemble piece, the characters were so they had depth. And, you know, and I've never seen the stage production of Chorus Line. I want to make that clear. But it's just, from what I saw of the movie, it's an ensemble piece, and each character had its own kind of depth. And I appreciated that. I appreciated that, and plus, it has rewatchability. There's plenty of funny moments, and honestly,
Oh, I'm sure we missed things. The number if I went back and watched it again, I'd be like, oh, I didn't even see that the first time.
Honestly, yeah. The number I can do that saved a hat for me. That was...
Oh, yeah. That number alone is so good.
It's so great.
Actually,
so
thinking about great. That number, I'll change to 7.5.
7.5 see, I told you. It's, it saves...
I'll change to that.
Like, I would never in a million years give it like a 10 star.
No, no.
But it, or 10 hats. It's just... The rewatchability is decent. The music isn't terrible. Minus the mixing, but overall, I loved the characters, the character yeah. interactions.
All
I love
very
Michael
unique
Douglas.
And real characters. Yeah. So, out of let's say out of 10 carnivorous plants, what would y'all rate Little Shop of Horrors, the movie?
I would say 8.9 carnivorous plants.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Very specific Ooh. Number.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go straight up 9.
Okay.
That is a beautiful carnivorous plant.
I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to go right at an 8.
Okay.
I love Little Shop, but I think I like the play more.
Okay.
It's hard because Steve Martin and Bill Murray. I mean, But Audrey was just not very good. Mushnick, I liked Mushnick's role. Not even just like in terms of, yeah, you know, John was a better Mushnick. But in terms of, I like Mushnick's role better in the play.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot more stuff. Yeah, I'll go 8.
Okay. I think I would go 8.5. I think I'll go 8.5 plants.
Who would have thought I would have rated it the lowest?
Yeah.
What you consider your favorite show?
Yeah. I say 8.5. We lose a whole plant for Audrey because I couldn't deal with her voice.
Yeah, that
and
voice
the thing
is
was,
so annoying.
It's great.
She could sing. In Suddenly Seymour, when she actually opens up and, like, lets herself just, like, wail, she sounded great.
The voice was a purposeful choice for this movie.
Yes, but
that is not
what
she sounds like. That is not what her singing
voice
sounds
like. No, I'm aware. Yeah. But the problem is, we have seen that the voice can be done in a less porno actor way, and... I couldn't snap out of the fact that with just all the background and with her voice, I just kept expecting it to suddenly turn
into
a
She would have been
porno.
Better if we hadn't seen Kayla do Audrey.
Probably, yeah. Probably true, yeah. Okay, but...
But yeah, no, 8.9 for... the reason why I don't give it a full 9 is just because it's... I mean, I don't know, like, I've been a little spoiled by the musical. There's a lot of numbers that are just kind of not in it. That I kind of enjoyed and that kind of gave, because the entire point of songs is to give depth to characters that mm-hmm. don't have a chance to really shine. And you know, yet like Mushnick and Son, for example, is a big number and you don't get that, and it doesn't give the same tension that it has for, you know, Seymour offing Mushnick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it adds
does take away that tension, but I think it might have been an even trade to trade Mushnick and Son for Mean Green Mother. I think it might have been an even trade.
But the thing is, yeah, that's fair. That's fair, but I don't know.
I think I just love that song too much. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, 8.5 for me. 1 point has to go away for Audrey's voice, and just because it wasn't even just, like, the voice, like, just the quality of voice. It was also the way that she just, like, barely moved her face to do the voice. So it took away a lot of emotionality with it, and so I was just kind of like, okay, you know, I feel weird watching this scene. But yeah, I think it loses another point, honestly, just for me, because it's not my favorite show of all time. And then half a point for just kind of like awkward sound mixing and like things like that. But I will say I think I liked the movie better than the stage show, in my opinion, having seen it. You know, not because not because y'all didn't do a great job, but just because this, I felt like, sort of implemented that really dark, seedy feel a little bit better. And it had more, you know, it had more money to do so. It had more, like, dark, kind of sketchy alleyways and, like, you know, mm-hmm. a lot, like, you know, just kind of, like, better, like, lighting choices and things like that really helped establish this really seedy little area. Because I remember in the play, I was like, okay, this is supposed to be kind of a sketchy area, but it doesn't look that sketchy. So, like, it was hard to like, suspend my disbelief a little bit. But I think just because of the environmental establishment, I liked the movie a little bit better. And also, of course, because your boy, Steve Martin. I mean, he's just, he's so perfect.
That's incredible.
Donnie was amazing. But Steve Martin.
I don't think I don't think Donnie would be mad that.
Oh no! Steve Martin would top most people in most comedic areas.
Right.
That's just the truth.
One of the only people who can outshine Steve Martin comedically is Bill Murray.
And it was just such a good scene watching them both. It was so good. But yeah, so solid 8.5 for me. Definitely a recommend. I kind of want to look up like a YouTube video of the alternate like director's cut version and watch that and see what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Yeah, I don't think it's long, so I'll probably look it up after this. But yeah, I would recommend. I'd recommend both of these. I think they're both good. I think the only reason A Chorus Line failed is just they didn't really have a good target audience as opposed to Little Shop. But yeah, I think it's I think these are both really good, and I think anyone should, you know, take the time to watch both of them. But yeah, so if that's everything y'all have.
Yep.
Okay, so I don't know what that was. Frosty just like threw something in the other room. But yeah, so Call of Cthulhu is well underway. We have done our full first round of recording, so most of the stuff is, you know, recorded and, you know, starting to be edited. We're working on all that. It's going to be a nice long process, so I'll be saying that kind of over and over for a while because it's a lot of recording to go through, a lot of editing and sound effects and all this stuff. But I'll keep y'all updated on whenever, you know, we have a release date. And we're going to be putting out stuff for like a sort of meet the actors and meet the team kind of thing the further that we get in. So we'll be listing off everyone who's performing in it, what they're performing as, you know, where you can find them if they have a site or social media. And also, we actually, Sam, it's confirmed, right? I can announce Kids Camp?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Yes, and actually, this summer is the start of our first ever Summer Kids Camp.
Summer Kids Camp!
Yes, we're going to be having a, I believe it's a, what, 10-day? 10-day Kids Camp?
10-day Kids Camp.
10-day Kids Camp! where they will be putting together a production of Jungle Book. It is for ages, what's the age range again? I forgot. It's on, hold on, I need to say the age range. Give me 2 seconds so I can pull it up.
Summer Kids Camp!
Yes, so it's going to be from June 14th to 18th, actually. But those are just the performance days, I think. I think those are just the performance days because that's only 4 days. Oh, wait, sorry. It's 14th to 18th and then 21st to 26th. That's what it is. And it's for age ranges 7 to 14. And it's from 9 to 4 all those days. So, you know, if you bring us your kids, we'll keep them out of your hair for, what,
from 9 to 4?
For 8 hours. Or for 7 hours. 7 hours. But yeah, we're going to be sort of teaching them the entire theater process where, you know, they don't just come in and like learn their lines and their choreography. We're also going to teach them how to make props, how to, you know, I'm going to be in charge of makeup. So how to sort of conceive and implement, you know, different types of makeup, how to, how like, you know, sort of like lighting and sound and set building works, you know, how the choreography process goes for movement, you know, things like that, how the music process goes. They're going to be learning about all of it so that they can, you know, have skills that they can build upon later. But yeah, so we're starting that in the summer and we are very excited. So you can visit our website or you can message us if you want to, you know, learn more about it, if you want to register your kids. And specifically, if you want to email our Kids Camp director, her email is sammarie.madartists@gmail.com. That is sammarie.madartists@gmail.com. She can give you all the information on it and get you registered. But yeah, I think that's all that we have for you guys.
For the Summer Kids Camp!
leave us a review on whatever you're listening on, if it lets you. You can, if you have any questions, comments, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can send a message to our social media or email us here at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Again, a shout out to Shannon Liza for recommending this series. Check out her her page. It's MS Studios, m.s.studios. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.